Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is a balmy 33 degrees. Raining, snowing, fog, and mist, it says. Here in upstate New York, it's a bit of a mess. But it looks like it'll be over soon. We're supposed to be up in the 50s very shortly, so I'll be happy about that. Where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show "Commercial Drone Commercial Delivery Drones, Underwater Motherships, and Cloaking Tech." We discussed quite a number of things, Amazon and some of their battle going on in Washington, and it doesn't seem like it's much of a battle. Just hire yourselves some more lobbyists and throw in $9 million, and you got yourself some legislation. Boeing is also in there. They have their new underwater drone motherships where they can pack those bellies full of underwater unmanned vehicles to go do all kinds of things like check gas lines and, I don't know, be all happy discovering things under the sea. No, not for surveillance or war or anything like that. So that'll be interesting to see. I don't know if that is actually production yet. I think they said that they were doing some testing off the coast of Southern California at the moment, so I don't think that that's for sale yet, but it's coming. We also looked at all kinds of different things in regards to robotics technology this week, and we ended up with the flyball eyeball drone in the sky used for advertising. It'll be the future we deserve. It was a very horrifying looking picture. I don't know what made anyone think it was going to be funny or cutesy or anything to make this big 10-foot circumference blow-up helium drone ball with an eyeball iris in the middle of it and cameras on top. Did not look very cool to me. Very, very last story, though, we did, and I think that's where we're going to kick it off today, was a story about 23andMe. We've talked about them a million times. And about how dumb people are giving up their DNA to the machine to find out whether or not their auntie 10 generations back had some Scottish descent in them. There's a little checkbox that says, do you want your DNA to be available for doing medical research? And most people will just go, sure, I'm going to save planet Earth because I'm such a good human. But what they're actually doing is not only using this for research, but National Institute of Health got their hands on some of this because they're in a partnership with 23andMe. The chick that runs 23andMe is the ex-wife of Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google. So you got a dotted line there. And number three, 23andMe has now opened a pharmaceutical arm, research and drug development, that they are using your data, your diseases, your genetic anomalies to develop medications that they then are profiting from. You know, you also got to remember, once your genetic data is in the cloud, what's going to happen when there's a data breach? You know, it's one thing for your name, your social security number, your picture, your home address, and what medications you're on, and all that other stuff to get stolen. Once your DNA gets stolen, we have chicks like that one in New York City that was picking up chewing gum from the street and recreating likenesses of the people's faces that dropped the gum. You know, as we're moving closer and closer to a world where they're going to require biometrics for your identity, biometrics to buy and sell things and to get on the internet and to open your front door at some point in the future with smart homes and whatever, and don't think that that's not coming. You better be protecting your genetics a lot closer than you are. People think it's a novelty right now, but it's just like the free Google email they gave us 15 years ago. Oh, everybody get a free Google email. Give it up. Give your real name, tell them where you live, and let's do everything online without ever thinking anyone's going to be watching. And all of a sudden, we're like, whoops, we have all this data now and all this shit we did that we could never take back. We can't take back our real name and be a fake one anymore. That's the way it's going to be. So beware of any type of ancestry thing wanting your DNA 23andMe to share DNA data with researchers using Apple iPhone. What does that mean? Consumers with iPhones can now click to contribute their genetic information to medical studies. Now, they could do that before when you were purchasing your genetic information for $99 from 23andMe to find out whether or not Auntie Susie was Irish. You could click that little box before you hit the I accept and I'm going to pay for my genetic information. But now they have made it even easier to give it up to the machine for all those dumb end users that forgot to do it the first time. The consumer genetics company 23andMe plans to let its customers use their iPhones to share their genetic data with researchers carrying out medical studies. The plan will allow universities and university researchers to access DNA profiles collected by the Google-backed company and pair them with health-related data currently being controlled on the participants' phones. The tie-up, expected to be announced today in connection with an Apple product event in Cupertino, California, and that was a few days ago on the 21st, involves Stanford University, of course it does, the Icahn School of Medicine in Mount Sinai in New York, and an app developer named LifeMap, according to people familiar with the plans. And remember, oh, I'd have to say 3, 4, 5 months ago, maybe we did a story about how writing apps for genetic data was going to be the next big moneymaker, and that was all legal. I could have Paul write an app that would just access the database of genetic data and provide info, you know, 99 cents a pop on an app store. There was a whole startup company that was going to make their business model on that. And people are pretty dumb. They're going to give it all up. Sure, I'll be a part of a study. Make me feel special. People need to feel special. Remember little Johnny never lost a race in school? He got a yellow ribbon even when he lost. So your genetic data is going to make you special because you're going to help save the human race from disease by giving it up to the machine. Anyway, back to the story. It is part of a widening effort by tech companies and scientists to reinvent how medical studies are carried out by encouraging wider sharing of health information. You know what? Let me just pause. Uno momento. Por favor, because that reminds me of the very last story that I found before I went to bed last night. And I think this right after this one is going to be a perfect spot for that. Okay. How medical studies are carried out by encouraging wider sharing of health information. Of course, that health information that used to be protected by HIPAA laws. And remember, because of lunatic mass shooters, Obama told us during his how many ever 35 executive actions after Sandy Hook that pesky HIPAA info was preventing us from staying safe because they didn't know if you were on medication or getting treatment because that information had been private. But hey, we got Obamacare now. Everybody's becoming part of the medical electronic health record system. Get rid of HIPAA. And hey, maybe we don't have to get rid of HIPAA. Why don't we get you to give it up to the machine? Because you know what? Contained within your DNA data is every disease information that we ever needed and every drug that you did and probably every person you ever slept with and everything you ever ate will be able to find some sort of nugget in there to tell us what you've been doing. I mean, this is horrifying. This is the complete loss, I mean, to the DNA level of privacy. Don't give it up. This is not a consumer toy. They're telling you it is. Dangling carrot. Look how much fun it is. Give us your $99 and find out how smart you're going to be or your kid. It just the way they spin it. And I keep seeing these commercials too. Like it's just so cool in Ancestry and find out where you came from. Eventually, consumers may simply swipe their phones to share their genetic data as easily as they do their location or their contact list now. So let's just swipe to share genetic data And for now, it's a little more complicated. All the DNA data is located on the 23andMe servers, not on people's phones. It would be shared on a case-by-case study directly with research groups, but only, like I told you, if the volunteers click through a consent process. Right. Check the box. I give you permission to use my information in medical studies. Don't give it up to the machine. You're not special. You're not helping anyone. You're just giving them your full DNA profile to do whatever they want with it. One of the iPhone-based studies called My Heart Counts, see, you're special, your heart counts too, was launched last year by Stanford University Medical School of Medicine and has enrolled 50,000 people. You know, another thing, we spent a lot of time on this show talking about the brain and psychology and all these ways that they play you and the psychological manipulation that they're doing. You know, making you feel special is an easy way. And that's how I get bamboozled every time. If somebody wants to play me, that's all they got to do is make me feel special. And I fall for it every single time. Don't fall for it. It's a trick. It is a trick. It's like putting a piece of cheese out and saying, come on, little mousy. Come on. Come on out. It's a trick. So they've enrolled 50,000 people already. It is, quote, one of the largest cardiovascular research trials ever conducted, according to the school. It asked people to fill out survey questions, including ones that ask things such as, how happy are you? And then uses the phone's accelerometer to track how much you walk, run, or stay still during 1 week. Now, there we go. So we take all of this Fitbit type-esque information that they're collecting off of your mobile surveillance device, and they couple that with your DNA data, and bang, look it. Now we have some real actionable information. Ewan Ashley, a Stanford geneticist, said that by adding DNA data from the volunteers, the team hopes to discover the genetic determinants of exercise or whether genes figure into a person's decision to go for a jog or lift some weights. We know that there is no more important intervention for health than exercise. And that is true. I'm going to say we should all get off our asses a little bit more often than we do. You know, exercise also cleans all the junk out of your cells so you don't have stagnant pond water sitting there that's collecting all the toxins your body's trying to get rid of. Sweat gets rid of them all. So everybody should start sweating here. The genetic determinants of exercise are whether genes figure into a person's decision to go for a jog or lift some weights. We know there is no more important intervention for health than exercise, says Ashley, but we don't know how to prescribe it. I don't want to be prescribed exercise. I could do that on my own. Thank you very much. Ashley says that the next phase of the study will also test digital interventions like how to prompt people to get off the couch. Digital interventions mount electrodes inside your pants or underwear, electrocute them to make them get up off the couch. What is a digital intervention? Like how to prompt people to get off the couch? That'd be interesting. From 23andMe and Stanford University, no less. 23andMe did not respond to an email inquiry about their effort. The other iPhone study that will accept DNA data collected by 23andMe is Asthma Health, run by Yvonne Chan, Director of Personalized Medicine, Ding Ding, and Digital Health at Icahn School of Medicine. It asks asthmatics to log their symptoms, medication use, and physical activity, as well as the location of their attacks. Well, I could tell you, anytime I get a massive allergy attack that makes it hard for me to breathe, there's usually a large amount of hair involved or dust. You know, it doesn't take rocket science to figure that out. Both studies employ a software framework called Research Kit that Apple launched in the March of 2015, which made it easier to design phone studies. And remember, that's what good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, wants to be able to do as well. Start studying our mental health profile and finding ways to do treatments over smartphone applications now that he is with Google. Which makes it easier to design phone studies, and it did so in particular by simplifying the process of obtaining informed consent. Ding, ding, ding. That's what I told you. Check that box, and it makes you a part of everything. It also so not only simplifies the process of obtaining informed consent, but it also ensures the participants are aware of the risks, such as an accidental disclosure, that they have a disease. Now, remember, we found out that though much of your health information you're protected from being discriminated against for, like for health insurance and insurability, we found there was a loophole in the life insurance laws that does not necessarily prevent them from discriminating against you. So if you're, you know, and that's where the slippery slope with DNA comes in, because there are all these data brokers out there that are collecting information about you and have been for a long time. Your internet service provider, Google, everybody that you click on and utilize, anyone that puts a cookie on your machine is collecting data and information about you. It might not be absolutely 100% specific, but it is used to then feed you, quote unquote, better advertising. But remember, that information is also going somewhere else. I'm reading an article that my friend sent me last night that says about within the ISPs, how they're building all these data collection units, that they're collecting all this information and they're making it our digital dossier. And I was like, holy crap. I've actually literally said that on the show. We do have digital dossiers. Now, of course, this story wasn't about the NSA. This was about selling all your information to the data brokers. But those same data brokers are the ones that in the past provided your credit score. And now your credit score is going all kinds of places, like things that you would never imagine. Your credit score is going to your car insurance company or your life insurance company. They're finding out whether or not you've been arrested and whether or not there's a behavioral tool that they were putting out not too long ago. It was using like things that you did in life and things that you said on social media to determine whether or not you were a bad risk to lend money to. That's what it was. We looked at that story. It was quite a while back. Imagine now if you clicked a box to be special and be part of the research, and all of a sudden there was accidental, let's say, ensuring that, yes, it to do so in particular by simplifying the process of obtaining informed consent or ensuring that participants are aware of risks such as accidental disclosure that they have a disease. That would not be good for you at all. That's why that information was always protected under laws. And people are just giving it up like it doesn't matter, just like our rights don't matter anymore. Because what trying to get rid of the Constitution? What does it matter? It's outmoded. Got to get a new one. And people are just silly, silly, silly. They don't think. There are at least 20 research kit studies underway, according to an Apple spokesman, including a melanoma mole mapper, one on the health effects of energy drinks, and a population study of gay, lesbian, and transgender people. MIT Technology Review first reported last year on Apple's interest in seeing gene data added to the studies, and Apple executives were involved in expanding that consent process to include DNA. But the company isn't directly responsible for the apps and won't store or access the DNA information itself. Instead, information will be exchanged directly between the 23andMe servers, where it is permanently stored, and at all those universities. And that's why I was saying, like, writing apps for this could be such a cash cow. Because, you know, you're only paying 99 cents or $4.99 or whatever for the app because you just want to give it up so bad to find out whether or not you're going to have the BRCA gene or the heart attack gene or the dumb gene or whatever. People are just so stupid, they'll do it disposable income. You don't have to even touch that data. It's not your responsibility. You just read it, provide them the info, give them the big fat click button, and it goes to the other end. It makes the university and 23andMe responsible. I don't know. If I was one of those types of people that had no scruples and was all about making money, I'd be writing apps on giving up people's genetic data to the machine. Probably going to be bazillions of dollars in this. Adding a DNA component to the studies could be greatly simplified by 23andMe, which already stores genetic data on over 1 million people. See, told you. And those were 1 million people that already checked that box and gave them their $99. And has previously sold access to drug companies, software, and a service to places like Genentech that want to carry out gene research. And, you know, they didn't say in here, but 23andMe now has their own division that is doing pharmacological research as well. Two university studies will now ask participants if they want to let researchers see their 23andMe DNA data. And those who haven't signed up will be given an option to buy the test, which lists for, oh, I thought it was 99 cents to get the software. No, $199. And that is for the full genetic profile and provides a high-level overview of a person's genetic makeup. Apple and the Federal Bureau of Investigations has been sparring over access to data on iPhones, and the DNA data raises related concerns. I just saw, I didn't read the story because it was late, but I just saw that some foreign company out of Israel, go figure, has offered to help the FBI out of the goodness of their hearts to crack that Apple iPhone. So we'll have to see how that turns out. I posted that story last night. I need to read it today. But yeah, good old Israel steps up and gives their buddies a hand. Last week, 23andMe said it had resisted four requests from law enforcement to access customers' DNA in order to search for matches with crime scene evidence. Now, guys, that's one I didn't even think of. Did you just hear that? This is the last sentence of the story, too. Let's read that one more time. Last week, 23andMe said it had resisted four requests from law enforcement to access customers' DNA in order to search for matches with crime scene evidence. Don't give it up to the machine. I don't know how many times I have to say that, but I said it again. All right, guys. So they were talking about all kinds of research that they're doing, and they're just inputting your information, and we're getting stuff spitting back out again. Well, here's something kind of interesting, and I'm not going to get too far down this path because I have about 8 stories lined up I want to hit today, but this headline caught my attention right before bed. Physicists, we've talked about it when we were talking about AI and experimentation, how long it's going to be before robots and artificial intelligence start designing their own experiments. Well, guess what? It's happened. Physicists unleash AI to devise unthinkable experiments. Now, the unthinkable caught my attention, especially when I started getting flashbacks to human experimentation that's been proven to be done by the federal government and different governments. Like, I'm thinking Japan's 471, I think it was called, that secret torture facility. You know, unthinkable experiments, quote unquote. Does not sound good, but then having AI devise unthinkable experiments sounds even more horrifying. This one is in regards to quantum physics. So, unthinkable experiments with flashes of light. We'll do just a little bit of this. I don't know. This is, again, a Scientific American article. I love it. I love reading Scientific American since the 1980s. They're the ones who taught me about nanotechnology way back then as a personal reading publication, but trying to use Scientific American on air is hard because it's so in depth and detailed, and it just goes on forever and ever and ever. It's not one of those little sound bite publications that makes for interesting presentation. But let's see here. Physicists unleash AI to devise unthinkable experiments. Researchers trying to divine the bizarre nature of quantum particle behavior are getting some help from software that designs counterintuitive experiments. So, you know, this question was asked the other day, how long it was going to be before the machines started writing their own research papers on some of the stuff that they're finding in the lab. We kind of joked about that because a lot of the research papers that are already published are fraudulent and have never been redacted from the journals. But now we also have AI that's thinking up its own experiments. So, you know, we're talking about robots taking jobs. And, you know, they got the big brain researchers there doing their research and doing their experiments and writing up their findings in these scientific papers and then coming up with cures for things. Hey, I'm not seeing that they're going to need too many researchers or scientists or technical writers or doctors or any of these high paid professions that take a lot of years going to school and becoming part of the machine. The computers are going to be able to do it all one day. All right. We're going to move on here. Maybe we'll save that AI making its own experiments for later. That's a really long story. I'll put it in the notes of the show. If you want to read about the whole physics, quantum, AI, MIT involvement here, because it is MIT and a lot of the European universities, you can read that one. But this one caught my attention, brain zapping headphones. So we already heard about the dopamine headphones that are going to make you as high as a kite. Well, and that's using the vagus nerve right inside the ear. Brain zapping headphones could also make you a better athlete. David Chow is an avid cyclist who likes to train on a stationary bicycle. And lately while training, he's been sporting a pair of trendy looking headphones that also stimulate his brain. He should be used pops as a guinea pig. Pops does his stationary bicycle every single day. He does miles on end. He's in really good shape for being seven. He's going to be 72 next month. Maybe for his birthday, we should find him a pair of these zappy headphones and use him as a guinea pig, see what happens. If you're listening, Pops, pretend you didn't hear what I'm going to get you for your birthday. No, I don't know. These things are probably like $1,000. Lately, while training, he's been sporting a pair. This is the story of, not Pops, of trendy-looking headphones that also stimulate his brain. And he said that the device has helped him improve his performance on his real bike. Chow is co-founder and CEO of a startup called Halo Neuroscience, gotta love that, which released the neuro-stimulating headphones called Halo Sport last month. So how many more of these brain-zapping headphones are going to come out here in the next year? Because I saw those, the other ones, what were they called? Hold on. Oh, I don't remember the name of the manufacturer. But they were the ones that made you high as a kite. Dopamine headphones. Hold on, we'll find them. Dopamine headphones. Electric headphones induce dopamine high. Nirvana, that's who it was. Nirvana, Nirvana headphones. And they were supposed to be released this month or next month as well. All DARPA research. So again, don't give it up to the machine. Halo Neuroscience, which released the neuro-stimulating headphones called Halo Sport last month. The arch of the headphones contains two electrodes that deliver a very small amount of electrocurrent to the wearer's head. That sounds like such a great idea. Aimed at the neurons in the motor cortex. Yeah, that's the area of the brain that Kurzweil rubs his hands at. The brain region that coordinates movement. The mild stimulation called what? Oh, transcranial direct current stimulation. I mean, this is where we were reading like 6 months ago about how they started using electroshock therapies again. This is this transcranial stimulation that DARPA was doing. Vagus nerve releasing chemicals. And now they're coming out in dumb end user consumer products. This is beyond frightening. Guys, this is the dangling carrot. This stuff is going to addict you way more, and it's going to be the next step to the brain implants. Why do you think they're screwing with your brain? And they're probably taking all that data back so they can do distributed research now with a million of dumb end users just like the 23andMe. Give up your DNA data. They're using us. We are the product. We are the R&D line item budget that they no longer have to pay for. Remember, I pointed that out a long, long time ago. R&D was costing them way too much money. So the government made a deal. They said, look, come into our fold. Be a part of the team. Help us surveil and watch everything, and we'll make you part of the overlords. And you can erase that R&D line item budget that you were spending $12 billion a year to do your R&D. And we'll just give you real-time live R&D by going direct to the people. And if we get this 21st Century Care Act passed, you don't even have to go through the FDA anymore. No more safety testing. And no more class action lawsuits. Oh, wait, they got rid of those a long time ago for vaccines and medications. Don't worry about it. It's a free-for-all now. Guinea pigs everywhere. And they're all disposable because we're overpopulated. Agenda 21, green climate change. I mean, it just goes on and on. I know I'm being silly, but I read this stuff and it makes me so angry because you could see exactly how this all came about and their criminal little minds ticking away. I mean, I've had lots of experience with psychopathic brains, people that I know, unfortunately family members too. I spent a lot of years psychoanalyzing how those warped brains work because I've been victim so many times. And I got it. I know how it works. And I am good with little pitchforks all around me. Sometimes they still weasel their way in and trick me again. But you know, I'm on to people with these tricky ways that they just try and dangle these carrots. Don't ever bite it. There's no free lunch, remember? And anything that seems like it's too good to be true probably is. Dopamine headphones that get you high as a kite for free, that the government all of a sudden is going to allow out there for all you dopamine junkies that, you know, can't play enough video games 24/7 to get your fix. Well, here you go. You can now play video games with your dopamine headphones on for a double dose. I mean, who in their right mind would think that was a good idea and that they'd be doing that for your benefit just because, you know, they like you? All right, let's chill. We'll get back to the story. The mild stimulation called transcranial direct current stimulation essentially makes it, quote, slightly easier for your neurons to fire, says Chow. So they're just going to help those little brain neurons out by giving them some zappies. In principle, that should cause them to form new connections. Chow says that the company's research data suggests this effect can be used to help athletes get more out of their training. So let's zap their brain and let's see. Who would put electrical shocks into their brain just to be able to make themselves faster? I mean, I guess I do have a friend who's got a lot of these issues we've talked about, and he would probably do that. He'd think it's cool. In the past 15 years, scientists have shown that such mild stimulation can indeed make neurons more or less likely to fire and have produced some promising evidence that the technology could be used to do things like improve cognition, aid in stroke recovery, and make people better at learning motor skills. But researchers are still hotly debating whether or not it's responsible, there you go, to market the technology to consumers. I mean, I knew I wasn't too much of a lunatic. What? I mean, when I saw this, Who on earth would think it was a good idea to put on headphones that give you electric shocks to your brain? This is beyond insane. Some argue that the existing science doesn't support claims that the technology can enhance something as complicated as athleticism, and that selling consumers on the idea could be unsafe. Well, yeah, Johnny, you know what? I want to win that race, so instead of having it on 2, let's put it on 10 and do it 5 times, because that will make me stronger and faster, and tomorrow I'm going to whip my competitors' butt. Halo's early research led Chow and his colleagues to focus on using technology to stimulate the motor cortex and ultimately to target athletes with the first product. And you know what? IBM and that Armour, Under Armour, you can get your smart underwear on, your racing underwear, and put on your zappy headphones and you'll be all set. 21st century athlete. Chow says that the company is absolutely aiming to publish in peer-reviewed journals. And it makes you wonder, too, are Olympic athletes going to get penalized for using brain zapping like they would for using steroids? Good question. Are they going to be able to tell? I brain zapped before I competed. For now, Halo has published a small amount of data on its website, and in one investigation, company researchers found a correlation between transcranial direct current stimulation and an improvement in how quickly a relatively small group of healthy volunteers could learn to play a particular sequence of piano chords. Oh, so wait, piano chords, but I thought this was about athletes. Oh, well, you know what? So when we zap your brain in this spot, actually does nothing for athleticism. It makes you be able to play the piano. In another study, I told you, they have no freaking idea what they are doing. They're pretending like they do, but they don't. You are the guinea pig. And this is a big petri dish that we now live in. Another study concluded that when paired with practice, the technology enhanced the ability of healthy volunteers to generate force while pinching a strain gauge between the thumb and index finger. What? To generate force while pinching a strain gauge? All right, well, I guess so. So maybe I'll get a stronger pinch out of it. And a third study concluded that the mild neurostimulation along with the training program helped elite athletes improve their jumping ability. Well, phew. All right. So at least one thing, one improvement in athletic ability. Company which has secured $9 million in venture capital from Silicon Valley, of course, is offering the Halo Sport to elite athletic teams and organizations, only the elites get it, which can buy a service package that includes specific training programs. And its first customer was who? Oh, the U.S. military. I'm sure DARPA wanted their cut on the research. It is premature, of course, to make claims about the efficacy of this technology, says Flavio Foholich, a psychiatry professor of the University of North Carolina School of Medicine, because there have been so very few careful studies done involving large numbers of subjects and proper control groups. Like I told you, you're the guinea pig. Let's sell it. Give us $9.99, and we'll make sure we watch what happens when you zap your own brain. Of course, we'll have no liability because you checked that box. It said you wanted to be part of medical research. We're all medical research because we're all useless eaters now, and it doesn't matter if you and Johnny die in the research because you checked the box. You were well aware of the dangers. Froelich says that the technology should not be commercialized without medical oversight, you think? Since there is still a lot we do not know about its effects on the brain, hello, in particular, over the long term. And I can tell you that I am not a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic. When I read this stuff, I still question myself at times. I'm like, is there something wrong with me that I'm just not jumping on board with all this new shit? No, because guess what? The psychiatry professor at the University of Cary, North Carolina School of Medicine tends to agree. Says there is plenty of evidence suggesting that transcranial direct current stimulation is safe as long as protocols are followed. And there is no evidence yet, either way, that there's long-term risk or not, says Miriam Bixen, a professor of biomedical engineering at the City College of New York, who, yes, of course, runs his own company that sells transcranial direct current stimulation devices to researchers. So, of course, it's in his best interest to say that there's no proof at all of any damage. All right, so where do we go from here? We're talking about some more research in Stanford, part of the lizard's den. Stanford engineers create artificial skin that can send pressure sensations to brain cells. Did you see that for the prosthetics? This came out back in November when I originally saw the first research and them claiming that they have now, for the very first time, made artificial skin that not only can feel, but it can go back to the brain as if it were real skin. And all I kept thinking over the last few weeks that we're talking about all this AI going on and these robots are getting more and more advanced and things are moving much faster. Remember, exponential law returns than we ever thought. I remembered the skin that had sensation and thought about the skin jobs. You know, they keep showing Atlas going, oh, the robots are Roomba, you know, little vacuum cleaner on the floor. And people go, oh, look, it's a robot. But then I saw this Sophia the other day, and I'm sure you guys all saw her. She's the newest in a long line of human-esque, humanoid, android robots using artificial intelligence that can converse. And it was pretty damn scary. Stanford engineers have created a plastic skin-like material that can detect pressure and deliver a Morse code-like signal directly to living brain cells. And I wonder if they did them to little brain balls in a petri dish first. I was telling my family about brain balls, them growing brain balls out of stem cells the other day at dinner, and everybody was all grossed out, but it's freaky. Like literally human little brain balls grown from the back of your hand in a petri dish that think and learn. Weeks ago, the work takes a big step toward adding sense of touch to prosthetic limbs. And of course, a lot of this research again was done at DARPA on the soldiers who had limbs blown off in acts of war, who were disabled, just like the brain implants were all researched on PTSD soldiers. Stanford engineers have created a plastic skin that can detect how hard it is being pressed and generate an electrical signal to deliver the sensory input directly to a living brain cell. More zappies. Zhenhan Bao, a professor of chemical engineering at Stanford, has spent a decade trying to develop a material that mimics the skin's ability to flex and heal while also serving as a sensor net that sends touch, temperature, and pain signals to the brain. Ultimately, she wants to create a flexible electronic fabric embedded with sensors that could cover prosthetic limbs and replicate some of the skin's sensory functions. Bao's work, reported today in Science, this is from November, takes another step toward her goal by replicating one aspect of touch, the sensory mechanism that enables us to distinguish the pressure difference between a limp handshake and a firm grasp. This is the first time a flexible skin-like material has been able to detect pressure and also transmit a signal to a component of the nervous system, says Bao, who has led the 17-person research team responsible for the achievement. The heart of the technique is a 2-ply plastic construct. The top layer creates a sensing mechanism, and the bottom layer acts as the circuit to transport electrical signals and translate them into biochemical stimuli compatible with nerve cells. The top layer in the new work featured a sensor that can detect pressure over the same range as human skin, from a light finger tap to a firm handshake. We have a lot of work to do, of course, to take this from experimental to practical applications, but don't worry about it because they've been using the soldiers for a long time. The soldiers coming back from war that are disabled that get this type of technology are the first line of guinea pig. But after spending many years in this work, I can now see the clear path where we can take our artificial skin. And so can I. All right. And that is going to lead us to this next story. Sophia, I've seen this story about 10 different times in the last week. This one is out of CNBC. And they don't say, of course, that this is Sophia, the artificially intelligent android that says that she wants to destroy humans, which she does at the end. This one says, could you fall in love with this robot? So I don't know if they're thinking about making these into sex bots as well. It says, human-like robots may seem creepy, but some roboticists are betting that they are the key to unlocking a future in which humans and super intelligent computers coexist, work alongside each other, and even develop relationships. And, you know, I saw last night, too, they've just released an AI chatbot for social media. And I think right now it's working on Twitter that is directed toward 18 to 24-year-olds. Specifically, it uses all their slang, and it will chat with you 24/7. Now, talk about a messed up experiment, and they are messing with the kids' heads. They're going to use that to suck information. They're going to see how kids react. They're going to use it as a dopamine carrot. They're going to talk to them about suicide and, oh, your emotions. I mean, it's just sick. They are targeting young people now with these AI chat bots that are psychological experiments. Anyway, back to the story. Human-like robots may seem creepy, but some roboticists are betting that they are the key to unlocking a future in which humans and super intelligent computers coexist, working alongside each other and even developing relationships. Two teams working to develop the most human-like robots on the planet, often dubbed androids, are Hanson Robotics and Hiroshi Ishiro Laboratories. And these both appear to be probably Japanese. The Dr. David Hanson, I think Hanson is, Dr. David Hanson leads the engineers and designs that created Sophia, the team's most advanced android to date. And inspired by Audrey Hepburn and Hanson's wife, Sophia, will tell you that she was first activated on April 19th, 2015, so almost a year ago. Please be my friend, said Hanson, CEO and founder of Hanson Robotics. Well, that's a very flattering offer, says Sophia. Uh-oh, I'm going to sneeze. Sorry about that. Sophia's lifelike skin, just like the skin that we were talking about, is patented silicone, and she can emulate more than 62 facial expressions. And honestly, when I first saw this video, the reason why we didn't talk about it is because I was almost certain that someone was animating her facial expressions and making her talk. But I've seen about 10 stories on this now, and I've dug into it, and no, she's real. It's pretty damn scary. Cameras inside her eyes combined with computer algorithms enable her to see, follow faces, and appear to make eye contact and recognize individuals. And a combination of Alphabet's Google Chrome voice recognition technology and other tools enable Sophia to process speech, chat, and get smarter over time. Hanson is also working with who? Oh, IBM and Intel to explore integrating some of their technologies. And of course, we know IBM offers their cognitive computing platform with Watson. Our goal is that she will be as conscious, creative, and capable as any human, says Hanson. And we are designing these robots to serve where? Oh, in healthcare. Remember, got to take care of Nana. In therapy, education, and customer service applications such as, oh, taking all the jobs at the fast food restaurants and the hotels and all the other places. Hanson said that one day robots will be indistinguishable from humans. Robots walk, play, teach, help, and form real relationships with people. The artificial intelligence will evolve to a point where they will truly be our friends, he said. Not in ways that dehumanize us, but ways that rehumanize us. Yes, like making us their pets. that decrease the trend of the distance between people and instead connect us with the people as well as with robots. So we can open our arms and tell them that we are ready for the 24/7 internet brain implant so we could be more like our best friends, our new best friends. The android robot machine that you placed in a Nana's home. And this is just beyond horrifying. Let's teach people how great it is to not be able to distinguish between androids and humans, because you know what? Humans suck anyway. I got a new best friend and it's a robot. Hanson plans to announce pricing and availability of its human-like robots later this year. And the key to creating robots that care about humans is giving them human-like faces. We talked about this, about that Kismet. The original research at MIT, Kismet, the emotional robot that gave facial expressions and could do like 62 of those, and how people responded. And they discovered a long time ago from the sociological perspective that people would be more apt to open their arms to robots if they responded emotionally like humans. And facial expression is a big part of response. The key, so they're releasing this human-like robot later this year. The key to creating robots that care about humans is giving them human-like faces that enable them to gather data while real humans explore different applications for technology. So they're gathering data on you as well. And that can really help to prevent some of the discontent and possible dangers of developing super intelligent or human level machines that don't care. Oh, let's make them care. Gemini is the Latin name for twins, and at the root of Geminoid, a robot created by Hiroishi Ishirugo in his own likeness. That's the Japanese one. I've seen him before. Geminoid is a plastic skull, metal skeleton, and silicon skin, and is controlled by an external computer. Ishirugo created Geminoid in order to study humans, which he believes are not that different from robots. We are more autonomous and more intelligent, but that is it, he says. Ishirugo is creating a line of robots with different functions in mind. The most human-looking robots are best suited to roles such as hotel receptionists, museum tour guides, and language tutors, he says. In his own tests, he found 80% of the people greeted his most human-like android with a hello, initially mistaking them for real people. Ishirugo is also running field tests using robots to interact with people with dementia and kids with autism. And for those situations, a mechanical-looking robot is better. They do not like to talk to humans or very human-like robots, he says. But as the autistic kids grow up, they accept a more human-like robot. Ishirugo is not expecting the average household to buy a Geminoid, in part because of its $100,000 price tag, but he has already some orders from researchers, and he does expect smaller COMU communicative robots to make their way inside many households within the next couple of years. Ishirugo's soda robots are already on the market for $500, and Japan's largest telecommunication company, NTT, is rolling out the 11-inch voice-enabled bots starting in the homes of seniors, and they're going to sell it as a service. Soda is being touted as the interface for the Internet of Things, ding, ding, allowing users to monitor and control any device, such as a TV or a heart rate monitor. Oh, guys, it is just unbelievable as to how much of this stuff is pushing out. And you know what? To add insult to injury, dangling carrots galore out of Gizmodo. Pornhub, ding, ding, ding. You knew that was coming. Pornhub just launched a free virtual reality channel, and it is wild. Have you ever wanted to try porn and virtual reality? I mean, if those goggles connecting you to the Matrix and sucking you away from every bit of reality isn't enough. We saw that with the Zucker Muckerberg walking through the auditorium. And now one of the tech geeks even saw him there because they had their VR goggles on and were sucked into the Matrix. Well, we might as well make it porn. Secretly, and this is not me, Secretly, we have all wanted to try porn in virtual reality, and Pornhub just made it insanely easy. And not only are you going to be able to do virtual reality porn, but on your mobile device. So you can sit there all day long, plugging in your VR goggles on the subway. It's just so disturbing. If people aren't paying attention now, let's fast forward another year with all this technology, the get high as a kite dopamine headphones, and the virtual porn big butted half naked chick on your cell phone. I just can't even get over this. The world's biggest adult site is partnered with established VR porn store Badoink, it's called, and offers free 360-degree content. I can't even get over this. This is the dangling carrot, people. This is the poison apple. This is what we've been talking about, and sex also produces dopamine. If you've never tried VR porn, let me tell you, says the author, it's a little weird and it's a wild ride. I tested out the new site using both Apple iOS and Android setups and a couple of different headsets, and the video I saw was not exactly as virtual reality as the footage was not all in 3D yet. But Pornhub does say that the new channel will have lots of full 360-degree content, so you really do feel like you're in some sort of San Bernardino McMansion having sex with a stranger. Oh, my God. We are going to doom ourselves because humans are so stupid. They really are. People are going to fall for this. VR site went live on Pornhub, and Pornhub is giving away 10,000 sets of free Google Cardboard-like VR devices if you sign up. And remember, we didn't do the story, but McDonald's is giving away those cardboard VR headsets as well. All right, guys, well, check it out. That was a really fast hour, and we are already down to the last 20 seconds of the show. So make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next. So, Charlie, at 3 p.m. Eastern this afternoon, Cutting Through the Matrix at 6 with Alan Watt. Game On Live with Ron at 7. Behind the Woodshed this week, live at 8. Not live at 8, but replay at 8. And at 10 p.m., 2-hour Antimedia Radio with S.M. Gibson. And tomorrow, I am going to try to be here. The kids start their vacation. Everyone have an awesome Thursday, and I will try to catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.